Dr. Brian Halverson is one of the UK's leading holistic dentists. He is the author of Great Teeth for Life and lectures widely to the public and to health practitioners. Brian is passionate about providing preventative information to guide us through all the stages of our lifetime. To find out more about Brian, go to www.brianhalverson.com. And now here is Dr. Brian Halverson.
I can see clearly now, the rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way.
Hi, Brian here, the integrated dentist for UKHealthRadio.com. I've got the great pleasure of introducing and speaking to Mike George. Now, many of you may know Mike, but if you don't, he's been a hero of mine for the best part of about 18 years. He's written countless books, I think it's something like about 14, and each one of them has got a viewpoint which I believe is bang up to date and, if necessary, into the future of the way we should be perceiving things. And I think that he's got a great way of possibly writing as well from the point of view that I can understand it. And if I can understand it, I think most people can as well. Now, the last book that I've read, which really did actually change my views on so many things, is called Being Beyond Belief. But it's the subtitle that I think literally is the killer. 30 beliefs you will have to kill before they kill you. Now, you can't help but not read it when you have a title like that. Mike, can you tell me, when did it all start? You know, when did you sort of have your, what I'll call, mission in life to help people change their beliefs and contribute to what I believe is a very much a modern and positive way of thinking about things?
Hi, Brian. Yeah, thanks very much, first of all, for having me on the show, as they say. It's kind of started for me around about 35 years ago when I had my brick wall moment, as it usually is one of those moments which it sets someone off on a different direction in their life. And so I just got very stressed out in the work that I was doing and woke up one day and realized, hey, I have to do something about this, can't take this anymore. And that's when I began seriously looking for another way to live, ways to relax, a wisdom that might help me. I started searching, basically, quite consciously. And I began to realize very quickly the one thing no one ever teaches us is something called self-understanding. And if I don't understand me, then it's no wonder I can't manage my life, my relationships, my roles and resources very well. So that's what kind of set me on the path of deepening my understanding, first of all, myself, and then, of course, that allows you to understand why the world the way it is today, basically.
Mike, what were you doing when you had this, if I may say, aha moment?
I was working in the whole area of marketing, communications, advertising, and I was doing various jobs. And of course, that world is very much deadline-driven, many clients, many demands. And so although I enjoyed it, and I was doing various tasks, as a Gemini does, he likes to juggle, it just kind of very gradually got on top of me, as much because that universe, that world, doesn't really have a great deal of depth of meaning. It's a pretty superficial world. And so that, combined with the pressure and the deadlines and the demands, all kind of drove me to, wait a minute, what am I doing? You know, this is me for the rest of my life. I don't understand. I don't get it. I don't like it. And so that's what kind of drove me to the wall, in a sense.
And then obviously, so having made that choice of this is not for you, you must have been fairly well brave or had some sort of thoughts about how would you progress? What would you be doing to, frankly, make a living?
Yes and no. I mean, I was working in Sydney at the time. I'm originally from Scotland, but I was down there for a couple of years, and I found myself just in a complete vacuum. You know, sort of a kind of what's the meaning of life vacuum. I don't see any values of any depth, generally speaking, in the world and the relationships and the organizations around me. So I was kind of completely lost, both mentally, spiritually, and a bit physically too. And so that was what was necessary for me to go, wait a minute, there's got to be another way. There has to be another way. So that's what triggered my search, really.
Yes, I mean, if it was 35 years ago, then you were really one of the pioneers in looking at life and really having some deep questions about where are things going.
Yeah, I think you'll find most people who are today generally known on the stage or on the internet or whatever, I think you'll find most of them go through a similar kind of phase, and it usually does take about between 20 or 30 years before you kind of have done your inner work and you've realized what's really going on and how you have been conditioned and programmed by the what you could call the material paradigm of the world around you. And it just takes a little while to really have the necessary aha moments, which allows you to be confident in your perceptions, your new perceptions, your deeper perceptions of what life is all about, if that kind of explains it a little bit.
Absolutely. Did you have any sort of, gurus of your own who you felt you sort of could help you on your path?
No, I never had one person who's I've kind of sat at the feet of, if you like. I've always been a bit of a shopper arounder and really curious as to what the old sages, the old saints, the modern day gurus, what they've all got to say. And very slowly, very gradually, it's about sort of joining the dots and seeing what's being said in common, and ultimately realizing that spirituality, if I can put a label on the awakening process, that spirituality is universal. We are universally spiritual beings. And so we just wake up to that realization in our own way, in our own time, in our own speed. And we have our own blocks, and there's a lot in common. But there's no real one source that I would put it down to.
Yes, I mean, from my own point of view, I started really quite late in life looking at the sort of what I'll call spiritual side, as opposed to the religious side of life. And I suppose went along with the sort of mainstream of what I'll call people seeking, which was Deepak Chopra, Wayne Dyer, and the likes of, including, as you say, some of the great sages.
Yeah.
What impressed me about your good self was that when I also discovered there, I also discovered yourself. And how I discovered you was through the organization, the Brahma Kumaris. Can you tell me how you became involved with that, what I believe is a fantastic organization?
Yeah, they're a spiritual university, basically, and their purpose in life is to provide a space and an opportunity for people to come and sit and learn how to meditate and to contemplate at a deeper level, if you like. And so they're kind of universally open to everyone. It's non-religious. It's a very kind of spiritualized process where they share a little basic information about who and what you are, but then you have to go and see for yourself. You have to practice and see for yourself. So I bumped into them when I was still in Australia, and I began to integrate their way of meditating. I began to explore their ideas as a kind of starting point for me. And the one thing that they have, which is kind of unique, is this combination of four practices, which I realized later on, you don't really wake up properly unless you integrate these practices into your day-to-day life. Not so much week-to-week life or year-to-year life, but your day-to-day life. And that's meditation, contemplation, application, and contribution. And these four practices are kind of necessary to if you like, accelerate or deepen your own self-awareness and your own self-awakening. So I've been in and out, and I have many friends in that particular so-called organization, but of course you can't organize spirituality. It's a contradiction in terms, organized spirituality. It's a very individual and personal journey ultimately. But the space that the BKs create allow you to make that journey on your own and in your own speed and your own time. And then you also have a supportive community of people around you who are on their own similar way of waking up.
I know, I mean, I have attended many, and what I really was attracted to was how the practice of meditation, I think their meditation is called Raja meditation. Could you explain what that means, and, you know, from a very broad base point of view, you know, the various sort of, when I say types, but certainly the sort that they will teach, because I think a lot of people have difficulty in even understanding the word meditation.
Yes, I mean, there's so many approaches, methods, techniques now, especially on the internet. You can consult Dr. Google and he'll give you 20 different ways into some kind of meditation. So the what the BKs do is like you have two parallel strands to begin with, and you kind of need this. It's not just enough to meditate itself, but there has to be some kind of understanding, some kind of information stroke knowledge that I'm working with in my meditation. And so that very simple and universal and ancient piece of knowledge is around who I am. In other words, my true sense of self, my true sense of identity, my authentic self. And the reason why we're not so happy today and why there is so much stress and suffering and sorrow is we've lost that authentic self-awareness. We don't know who we are. We've learned to identify with everything in the world, and which we're not. And so that's the real root cause of our unhappiness, whatever form that unhappiness takes. So it's this sharing of who I am and what I am. And the what I am is this understanding. Again, it's ancient and universal, and you'll find it in all spiritual paths ultimately, is that their true nature is loving, is peaceful, is joyful. It's not angry, it's not fearful, it's not sorrowful and sad. These are unnatural feelings or emotions that we create. And in fact, they're the emotions of suffering. And it's when those emotions become so intense that we hit that brick wall and we go, wait a minute, I can't take this anymore. And so that's when we go searching.
Yes, I must admit, whenever I know that you are a guest at, say, the Oxford Brahma Kumaris, I always know that they say, you're essential to book for Mike. and so really, it just goes without saying how good a communicator and motivator you are. When did you start actually looking at putting this down in a book form so that you could obviously get your thoughts and ideas down for people to actually have immemorial sort of it?
Well, I'll tell you a little story. I was in India about 20 years ago, I bumped into an astrologer. Apparently, I didn't know it at the time, but the top astrologer in Ahmedabad, and we were just sitting chatting. And after about 20 minutes, he took my index finger and he just squeezed it at the end. He looked up at the ceiling and he proceeded for the next 20 minutes to tell me everything about me, about my past, about my future, etc. And about how I think, how I created. No, I kind of couldn't believe it really. But one of the things he said was, I see a book, and I see a book with yellow pages, and I see a book with yellow pages and little paragraphs, little text down the column on each side of the page. And I'd never even thought about writing a book at this stage. But sure enough, about 4 years later, a publisher in London knocked on my door and asked me to do a book on relaxation, because they kind of heard that I was, you know, specializing in stress prevention and so on. I wrote the text, I gave them the text, and they designed the book. and the book was four color on the inside, and it, sure enough, it had yellow pages, and sure enough, it had little paragraphs of quotations, little texts down the edges of each page. And so, I didn't plan to publish it, just kind of came to me in a sense, and I suppose I've been doing it ever since.
Isn't it quite amazing that that you actually met this astrologer or foreseer or whatever one you call it?
It was an astrologer, yeah, okay. Yes.
And yet, by our modern perception, you'd have actually most likely dismissed it.
But yes.
You've actually, sort of must have been incredulous when you actually saw that first book come out exactly as he virtually predicted.
I was, yeah. I didn't realise it, of course, when I got the first copy. It was only when I think it was maybe a few months later, I started leafing through it and then made the connection with the memory of meeting that person and the actual book. And that was a bit of a wow moment, yes.
Oh, that's fantastic. Mike, I mean, I, as you know, have followed you in the sense that I get your missives that come through the is it Relax 7 or?
Clear Thinking.
Clear Thinking, that's right. For the listeners, how could people actually access words of wisdom as and when they come through?
If they want to subscribe to the Clear Thinking, and it's a very regularly irregular e-article, I kind of call it, really. If they want to subscribe to that, then go to relax7 as in the number 7.com and you can subscribe there. And then there's a new website going up in about a month, and that's called mikegeorgebooks.com, and that'll have books and videos and a few other things as well. I haven't really done anything on the internet for about 5, 6, 7 years now, and so I'm just kind of getting it together.
No, I think I would certainly, listeners, I would certainly recommend actually following Mike, because not only from the point of view of changing your perceptions, but also, if I may say, Mike, you challenge people.
Yes.
and in a fundamental way. Is the Being Beyond Belief your last book?
That's the most recent one, yes.
Yes, that's right. And I would certainly recommend reading this because it's so up to date. I don't know if you can recall the very beginning where you talked about murderers, or call them terrorists, and the fact that it's a belief system that is actually causing murder.
Yeah, that's right. Always, all conflict is just two sides with different beliefs. If you strip everything away, it's just two conscious human beings with holding attached to different beliefs, and the one doesn't agree with the other, and ultimately leads to violence. That's all it is, really.
Yeah, and you obviously challenge in the book, and I found it literally sort of difficult, and I think you deliberately made it difficult for, which I think is great, because I think that often we read books or we read expressions, and sometimes it's the really sort of things like consciousness and words that we actually think, well, what actually do they mean?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
And this is where I really do appreciate what you actually put out there, because you break down the basics, but you build them up or put them back together again in a way that not only is, comprehensible, but also the fact that it leads you to actually start to think for yourself.
Self, that's it. That's the aim, really. And that's why I often say, don't believe a word I say. It's really necessary to see for yourself. Otherwise, nothing changes. It's just more information, really. And information doesn't change anything.
Yes, it's interesting. In my second book, I actually put down, and my books are about much more about nutrition and health. And I said there that when you look things up on the internet, some of the things you read, you think, well, it doesn't sound quite true, or it doesn't ring true. And I say, well, it most likely isn't true. and I also say, don't even believe the things I tell you.
Yes, that's right.
But getting back to your book, because I just think there's so many points about it. What would you say when you set out to write this book? What was your objectives? What were you trying to really put across to people?
The basic premise is we get stuck with the beliefs that we either assimilate when we grow up, or we create and we think our creation is good. And so belief is like a sleeping pill for the soul, basically. When you believe, you're really saying, I don't know. And so you say, well, belief is enough. I don't need to know. Belief is enough. Because in order to know for yourself, you're going to have to make an effort internally to see with greater clarity for yourself. In other words, have insight for yourself, have sight in. And so it's much easier, especially in today's busy world, is just to believe, is just to sort of take the information, convert it into a belief, and then you turn around to other people and say, I know. And that's called arrogance, in a sense. And we get a bit stuck in that, in that process. So my aim was to try and help people to see that, and to say that there's another level, there's a deeper level you can go to. And one of the ideas is that you already know all that you need to know. It's already there within your consciousness. But it takes effort, it takes focus, it takes interest, it takes practice, it takes spiritual practice to access your own truth, your own awareness, your own aha moment. And I was doing that through taking particular subjects, as you probably noticed.
Yes.
And then having a look at those particular subjects, things that people talk about and mention and go to courses on and so on, and saying, have you looked at it this way? And if you look at it this way, you might see it for yourself at a deeper level. And then that might help people say, oh, wait a minute, this is interesting. Maybe I do need to kind of explore this a bit more for myself. If that makes sense. So that was really the aim of the book, actually.
Yes.
A part, of course, for myself. I mean, you know the old saying, how do you know what you know until you hear what you have to say? And so so I write primarily for me.
And do you find that you often, it's a slight journey of self-exploration at the same time?
Oh, yes, that's it. That's exactly it, definitely.
Yes, I mean, I was interested in one bit that obviously is appertaining to myself, and you are what you eat, so you change your diet.
Yeah.
You change your diet, and you blow that apart. but what I love about the way that you express what I'll call what most of us regard as fundamentals.
Yes.
And like you say, you know, often our beliefs are set up by what I would call our ego, in a way.
That's right.
And when you start pulling those apart and saying that really virtually everything that we so-called think we believe in about things, even, I suppose, doing good things, and
yes,
the way we then look at that and say, well, do we pat ourselves on the back or what have you? and so this is what I'm saying. I think that you have been extremely challenging, you know.
Well, that's the aim, really, is to not deconstruct, but is to sort of, you know, it's like a, if you've seen these packs of cards, you know, you take one card out, take another card out. How many cards can you take out before the whole pack doesn't fall down? And so everyone can stand so much. Well, all right, okay, I get that. There's another reality to that particular area, but wait a minute, this is a bit too much.
Yes, yes.
And so everyone's in a different space, really.
That's right. Mike, I mean, on a practical basis, Do you actually have any sort of tutorials or seminars that people could attend if they wanted to?
Not publicly. You just the public event on that website, relax7.com. Yes. And so there are lectures and talks, evening talks. There's usually one retreat at Ammerdown in August. So the new website that's going up will have lectures and talks and interviews on it. So, but nothing sort of formalized. And what the reason for that is basically a lot of my time goes in the work that I do in organizations, because I run leadership courses and management development courses and work for a business school. So I'm kind of out there in the mainstream, if you like, bringing these ideas very gently and into that context. So that's where a lot of my time goes, really.
I think that is obviously an extremely important area, because as inverted commas business is changing so rapidly, and the roles of people, the structure of management, I could see that, as you say, a gentle change, but change for the positive, because a huge amount of dissatisfaction from the very top, to me and my perception, appears to be because there just isn't the sort of almost the meaning to why, you know, the word business itself.
Yeah. Well, it's not so much organizations I work with, it's more the individual in the organization, because you're right, there is a great deal of dissatisfaction, stress, the feeling of not being free, the feeling of being enslaved to a job and salary and so on. There is a lot of that out there, and it's becoming more extremely felt because technology is allowing others to be much more free in how they work physically and make a living physically. And of course, technology is speeding everything up in terms of communication, so that affects the speed of everything. So it's challenging for the individual to find their place in the corporate world. And I'm in that universe, not to so much help the organization or the business per se, but to help the individual deal with it more effectively. And that's when I can help them see themselves more clearly and how to manage themselves with greater effectiveness and efficiency. And from that comes their ability to do their job more effectively. So that's the kind of context I'm working in.
That's great. I mean, sort of bringing us slightly, but bang up to date, there seems to be very much troubled times in the world at the moment, with a view that I think that, call it cosmic consciousness, but there seems to be a lot of unease no matter what level you are.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that?
Oh, for sure. I mean, there's one word to explain it. I don't know if you're familiar with the word, for me anyway, how I see it at the moment, and that's called entropy.
No, I would like you to explain it if you could.
Well, in the physical world, the law of entropy says that all energy moves from order to chaos. In other words, the energy that's trapped in the wood on the table in front of you is just sunlight hours trapped in a form. And so if you set fire to the wood, you release that energy, and it moves from the order of the wood, the form of the wood, into the chaos of heat and light, and it spreads to fill the room. And so if you set fire to all the tables, the temperature in the room will go up. Unless something comes from outside and refreshes and restores the order, the form of that energy. And for hundreds of years, we've been releasing the energy, physical material energy, of the form of coal, trees, oil, and so on. But every day, it's been refocused and replenished by the rising of the sun, which is the source of all material energy. But only in the past 100 years have we been releasing the physical energy faster than the sun can replenish, refocus, and replace it. And so you're seeing in the closed system, the ecosystem, and the biosystem, you're seeing the temperature going up, or there's chaos, there's a chaotic energy to the climate, the atmosphere, the environment. So that's the material process of entropy. The spiritual process of entropy is almost the opposite. Consciousness is designed not to take a form, but to be formless, to radiate freely outwards. You get attached to anything in your consciousness, because that's where attachment happens. You're trying to give form to the energy of consciousness. And then when something happens to that form, then you create emotion. You become upset, you become sad or fearful or angry. And it's the emotion that's created in consciousness. The emotion is the heat of consciousness. Emotion is the chaotic energy of consciousness. And of course, emotion is both addictive and exhausting. And so we become addicted to the emotion. That's why we go to the cinema twice a week instead of once a week. Mm-hmm. That's why we like to be scared safely so we can create fear, which we're addicted to, the stimulation. And so what does it take to stimulate and feed people's addictions? It takes more and more physical energy to create more and more movies and more technology to keep people on the seats and edge and emotional and so addicted. You're feeding their addiction. So the two feed off each other. And of course, consciousness, when it's in chaos, emotional chaos, is confusion. It's just confused. And so that's what you're seeing. That's why you get violence. It's just consciousness in a state of confusion, believing something, getting attached to a belief, my way, our way is the right way, their way is the wrong way, let's kill them because theirs is not the right way, and so on. And so this is the entropy of consciousness, and next to the entropy of matter, and you see how the two are interreacted. I'm sorry, I went quite fast there, but this is quite a complex, but...
No,
you'll begin to see the connection.
No, I can, Mike, and the thing is that I mean, I know we're talking about trying to save the planet here, but have you got any simplistic suggestions that could be an antidote to this sort of, what should we say, chaos in consciousness?
Well, the first thing is, of course, you can't change anyone else's consciousness. That's the first thing, I have to stop trying to change others. I don't mean going around the world doing that. I just mean just in my head.
Yes.
When you sit and watch the news and you become upset with someone on the news, the government or the non-government or whatever, and you get upset with them, it means you're trying to change them. It means you're not in a state of acceptance. You're judging and you're trying to fix. And so you're emotional. You're creating chaos in your own consciousness. So all I can do is restore calm and tranquility to my own consciousness. And that's why the practice of contemplation, to understand myself more deeply, that is my true nature. It is calm, it is peace, it is lovefulness. And so if I can bring that into the world of my own relationships, then I might influence others. I can't control them, but I can influence. And so if enough of us do that, then, the old metaphor, yes, one candle lights another candle, then there will be an effect. And of course, you have the media that can magnify that effect now. And I don't know if you've noticed that there's been a number of initiatives that have really benefited from the magnification of the media. And there's a group of people, I can't remember their name, but they go to places like Trafalgar Square and they sit and they invite you to come and look in their eyes. Yeah, and so it's just, you make eye-to-eye contact with the other person. That's all. You just sit and you gaze into the eyes of the other. And there's nothing mysterious or suspicious. It's just a connection between the consciousness of two human beings. And if you ask most people who've done that, they walk away with a very deep, profound shift in their consciousness. And they realize, actually, we might have different color of skin, we might have different belief systems, we might come from different parts of the world, but ultimately, we're all just human beings together. And so that insight, that realization, sometimes, for some people, is enough for them to shift their consciousness and realize, wait a minute, I have to start looking at other people and the world in a different way. And when they do that, then, well, that's another, if you like to say it again, the cliche, another candle lit. And that's all that can really happen, I think, in terms of helping to free the world from the explosion of violence that we're watching at the moment.
Yes, I remember from when I first read Power versus Force, David Hawkins.
Yes.
And I think he said in about 1987 or something that the lower energies were slightly outweighed by the positive energies.
Yes.
Meaning that the more enlightened sort of consciousness was just above that of the negative side.
Yes.
And I'm just wondering that because there are people like yourself who are giving out such wise and sensible messages, and as you say, you know, the energy that you give to somebody else will actually then hopefully be transferred to somebody else and so on. And you've got the media of things like the internet, and which, although can be a force for negative, it also can be very much as a way of distributing thoughts and energies for the positive.
Very much so, and it is too. I mean, the two sides are there, and it's just necessary that many, many people, and it's a kind of polarizing process, many, many people, it's understood, will have to hit their brick wall before they will come out of it, and so they're going to keep descending into that entropic, chaotic consciousness, and that's what we're watching, that's what the media like to tell us about more than the positive side. But there is a group of people in the world who've worked out that this is not the way to live, this is not our true nature, there is a more enlightened way, and they're seeing their role to help others to climb out of the darkness of that well, if you like. But of course you can't make people, and so the descent, the collective descent, if you like, is what we're watching now and what we tend to watch most of, because that's what gets our attention on television, on the internet, and so on. But I think both poles are in operation, very much so in, at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I've sort of taken, I suppose, a natural optimist. And sometimes I think that the negative pole, the lower energies, are almost putting up a defensive sort of resistance.
Yes.
They're saying, look, you know, we're on a bit of a losing battle here, because although there's a lot of negativity in terms of westernization in places like China, India, who now are great contributors to the conscious world in terms of communication and what have you, the whole culture of these places is often very profound and very positive. So I think that there is, if we take the global situation, that there is an outweighing of the positives as opposed to the negatives, but it's making the negatives far more reactive.
Yes, that's right. Well, the darkness is going to run from the light, because the light's a threat, really.
Yes.
Well, the other factor here, Brian, I don't know if you've kind of factored it in, was another very interesting, and of course it's an intuitive thing. It's you could probably see it as a set of beliefs or whatever, but is the difference between an old and a new soul. And the old soul, who's been around for quite a while, and yes, I am talking about many births, if you like.
Yes.
The old soul is lost in this world because it's just meaningless. People are so superficial. It's purely a material paradigm. And the old soul has known something much deeper, much more profound, much more spiritual, if you like, because it's been around longer. And the principle is everything starts new and becomes old. So when the soul was new, that means it was pure, it was clear, it was clean, it was naturally loving and peaceful. But as time has gone on, I've fallen into that darkness. So you have the old souls who are kind of fallen to the bottom of their journey and kind of waking up. But then you've got lots of new souls coming into the world. This is where it gets interesting. And a new soul doesn't understand anything deeply spiritual. The new soul enters the world and they've got all these wonderful toys, you know, the iPhone, the iPad, the knee pad, the head pad, or whatever. And they go, where's my toy? This is heaven. This is fantastic for me. And so they just want to play at the superficial, the material level. They're in a playground, basically. And they're going, what are these people talking about? Spirituality and soul and spirit and peace and love? Wow, no, I don't want any of that. Just give me my toys. And so you've also got this tension between the old soul and the new soul. So it's a factor for me because I just know so many people who you just intuitively sense they're tired. And so, you know, they're going, wait a minute, there's something much deeper in life than this. And I know I encounter in the work that I do many new souls who just don't get it. What's going on? I don't understand all that stuff that you sometimes talk about. So you have this dichotomy as well as the dark and the light. So it's just another piece in the jigsaw, really. But once again, please don't believe me. It's a very intuitive thing.
Again, Ike, I think very wise words and thoughts. And many of our listeners are listening to the show because they are on their self journey. And so, you know, again, if you were in a very sort of, what should we say, speaking in Hyde Park Corner, yes, you may find that a lot of your words would hit on stony ground.
Yes.
Whereas I think that certainly with our listeners, a lot of what you're saying would be very profound. I mean, I agree entirely what you're saying, and I must admit, when I attended the piece on the park last bank holiday, my wife and I just walked around and looked all age groups, and we just thought, well, why couldn't life be much more like this?
Yes, yes, that's right. Yeah, it's true. The thing is that we gravitate to something that we resonate with at this point in our life, and so that's why you get 3, 4, 5, I think it was actually more like 15,000 came this year over the 3 days.
Gosh, yes.
To that piece in the park, and it just gets a little bit more every year, and I think it's because there's more and more people kind of waking up and they're resonating and as well as searching for something deeper in their own lives, and I think that's only natural now.
And I think the expression that I think I love that you used in your book, which was instead of belief, it's knowingness.
Yeah, that's right.
And I love that word, you know, that it's you can't convince or argue to somebody about, what should we say, to make them knowing.
Yes.
And I think that is so profound.
Yes.
But for each one of us, I think that sometimes if you could just put a few scenarios in place,
yes,
and as you say, let them then self-explore, and
yes,
then it's, call it what you like, the aha moment where suddenly they realise, and you were sort of, I think, slightly embarrassed to talk about, what should we say, the belief of what the Christians would call reincarnation.
Yes,
but if you have that knowing, it really doesn't actually matter.
No, it doesn't. That's right. It's true. It's so true. There's the difference actually sometimes that I call the difference between blind faith and an enlightened faith. You know, faith in the world today tends to be based on a belief or belief system. You have faith because you believe, and of course, when you say you believe, you don't really know. And isn't that an old saying is that faith is belief without evidence in a sense, and so it's blind because you don't know. But if you integrate those spiritual practices in your life, you begin to have the aha moments, the realizations, and you begin to awaken what we're talking about now, that knowingness, and then your faith becomes based on knowingness. You kind of know that even though it's chaos out there, even though people seem to be killing themselves or killing others in the most amazing ways, that you kind of, there's a knowingness that, well, everything is, quote desiderata here, everything is unfolding exactly as it should, and everyone's doing exactly what they're doing, and I'm in this moment in exactly the space that I'm meant to be in at this moment. And so that's a different kind of faith. It's not forced, but it's coming from this inner sense of knowingness that's awakening all the time. I don't know if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely, Mike. I've tended to sort of look at a holistic approach to things, and and there is this argument about thought, where it is generated from, but from the point of view about general health, we hear things like now, expressions like adrenal fatigue, where people are so much, have so much in the way of emotions, which are then generating chemicals. So that That's in it. Effect, there has to be a break in the cycle. And I think that trying to find the peace and the knowingness about where you are, I think is the essential part of recreating that sort of, what should we say, our health, but a much deeper level of health.
Yeah, that's it. That's the essence, really, is finding, in a sense, it's the origin of your adrenal eruptions, if I can put it like that. And this is the difference for me between health and well-being. These two terms get very mixed up, especially on the weekend spa invitations. Come and have your well-being enhanced, but it's really just your health that you might improve, because health is physical and well-being is to do with your spiritual and mental state. And so that's why the old pain is compulsory, whereas suffering is optional. I'm sure you know this. Whereas health is to do with pain, it's to do with the physical, whereas suffering is something that happens in your being. So when you're suffering, you're not well in your being. And so the one affects the other, of course, and that's what you've just kind of articulated, is that if I'm in an emotional state, which is origins in my being, not in my body, that has an effect on my body. So why am I making myself emotional? Ah, it's me that's making me emotional. It's not the movie, it's not anyone else, it's me that's doing that. So then I suddenly start working on the wellness of my being, and that then affects the health of my body. But many people, they don't kind of pull those two apart. They don't see the difference between the two. It's mostly just to do with the physical, the material. I don't know if that's true in your universe or not.
I think absolutely. And I think that it's that differentiation that a lot of people really find it difficult to perceive. If you think about materialism, often going out for a great meal or what have you, you have a time which may be during that time, which maybe lasts for seconds, which in fact you may have a feeling of well-being.
Yeah.
And then you tend to look at people spending fortunes or having lifestyles just trying to chase those few odd seconds or moments,
yes,
to reproduce,
right,
it. And, yeah, what a pointless existence, if I may say. I mean, I shouldn't possibly say that, but, whereas, if I may say, what you're really trying to do is to help people seek a path where this can be much more part of, as opposed to having to always chase it.
Yeah, well, the one of the core issues, I think, what you're pointing at here is this confusion between pleasure and happiness. And
yes,
pleasure is, of course, a very physically stimulated. It comes from outside in, and we learn to believe, keyword belief, that pleasure is the only way to feel happy. So we go seeking more and more pleasures in order to be happy, not realizing that it's impossible to sustain. Every pleasure must come to an end, and of course we become addicted to the stimulation and so on and so forth. Whereas what's missing in our education or our upbringing or whatever is the understanding that our happiness has to come from not outside in, but from inside out. And perhaps it's the use of words sometimes, and for me the deepest happiness is this idea of contentment, this ability to be content, not passive, not inactive, but to be contented in the moment within myself and allow that to shape my thinking and my interactions with others. And so it's this confusion between the two. This is why most of us join the most popular religion in the world without knowing it, otherwise known as hedonism.
Again, you're being provocative.
Yeah, well, I don't know, maybe.
I think often you would most likely dispute with the word truth, but sometimes it's when that knowingness often makes us realise that a lot of our beliefs are so, I call it superficial, but also it's what we've been indoctrinated with.
And exactly, accepted and assimilated, yeah.
And again, I suppose being part of a tribe, that often these beliefs are so that we can be seen to be as with your peers. That there's right. a relationship, which again yeah. Is I think a lot of the things that you actually I think discuss and really sort of point out that it's not a problem if you really knowingly want to do it, but not to do it simply because you're pleasing your ego.
That's right. Yeah, your ego needs to be pleased by others.
Yes.
So there's this fear of losing the approval of others, so we just buy into the communal program that we've all kind of been brought up in. Yeah, absolutely. No, it's spot on.
Well, Mike, it's been an absolute honour for me to speak to you because I don't think we've ever had a sort of a chat before. I just pick up such positive vibrations, but also it's the way that you communicate to me makes things, when I say simple, it makes it attainable and makes me think. So it really has been a great honour to speak to you. Now, just so that if our listeners want to actually get hold of you, could you repeat where we could give you? We'll obviously can put this in a script as well, but if you could just actually, for listeners, just say where and what we can get you at.
Well, if you want to email, then it's mike@relax7.com. Mike at relax and then the number, the digit 7.com. So very happy to receive any emails and the website at relax7.com. It's only a couple of pages because it's being constructed, but there's a place to subscribe to the Clear Thinking article, basically.
And when you say subscribe, there isn't a cost involved.
No, it's free. Yeah. It's absolutely free. Yeah,
yeah. Just that often I can hear the listener thinking, how much is that?
Yeah,
then?
Yeah, how much is that? Yeah.
Lovely. Well, again, I really appreciate you spending time, Mike. Thank you very much indeed.
Nice to meet you. And thanks for your call.
Thank you.
See you soon.
Will do.
Bye.
I can see clearly now. Gone. I can see all